Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're embarking on an in-depth exploration of Neil McDonald GovCon Federal Sales Training for 2025. I'm Jordan Stevenson, your guide for this deep dive.
And I'm Charlie Matthews, ready to unpack the insights with you.
So today we're really distilling Neil McDonald's, well, incredibly comprehensive training. It's specifically tailored for small businesses, you know, the ones aiming to really thrive in the federal market. Mm-hmm. Our mission is to give you a real shortcut, a more direct path maybe to being well-informed on winning those federal contracts, understanding these critical market shifts.
Which are happening fast.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And leveraging new opportunities as we head further into 2025. It's really about transforming what can feel like a total labyrinth into something clear, actionable.
Precisely. And Neil McDonald's core philosophy, which, you know, it really underpins all of this, is that government contracting isn't some kind of secret club or a game of chance.
Right.
He insists it's a predictable process, something that when you follow it consistently leads to repeatable, tangible results. Okay. So our job today is really to break down those essential steps, the powerful tools he talks about and the crucial mindsets he emphasizes, hopefully helping you demystify this federal market.
Give people a sense of control.
Yeah, exactly. Control over their own trajectory.
Okay, so let's unpack this foundational mindset then. Starting with Neil's powerful conviction that government contracting is a process, not some secret. Now, that sounds simple. Process over secret.
Deceptively simple.
Yeah, but for so many people, the federal market just feels like this black box, right, shrouded in mystery. How does this philosophy actually change that perception?
Uh-huh.
And what are the biggest hurdles people face in really embracing it?
That's a fantastic place to start. His unwavering belief is that success in federal contracting comes directly from diligently following a repeatable A to Z process.
A to Z.
Yeah. It really is about consistent application of proven steps. It's not about finding some hidden trick or, you know, hoping for a magic answer.
Mm.
One of his standout phrases, and it really sticks, is that 90% of success is just showing up.
Okay.
Now, this isn't just some motivational fluff. It implies a deep, consistent commitment, proactive engagement, sustained effort in the federal market.
And when he says showing up, what does that actually look like day to day for, say, a small business owner? It's not just physically clocking in, right? What does those consistent habits that separate the show-uppers from the hope for the best crowd?
Right. That's where the rubber meets the road. Showing up for Neil means that consistent grind. It really does. It means dedicating regular time. Maybe it's an hour a day, maybe a block of time each week.
Whatever works.
Whatever works. But consistently to actively check those government portals like USSpending.gov, FBDS.gov, Salmon.gov, it means consistent, thoughtful engagement on LinkedIn.
Not just scrolling.
Exactly. Not just scrolling or liking, commenting, sharing actual insights, building genuine connections. It's about continuously refining your capability statement, nurturing your pipeline, and consistently building relationships, even when there aren't immediate opportunities staring you in the face. The real insight here is that this kind of consistency is the competitive advantage.
Especially against bigger players.
Especially against larger, maybe slower moving competitors. You become reliably visible, like a lighthouse, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that when an opportunity does finally align with your strengths.
They already know you.
You're already on their radar. You're not scrambling at the last minute trying to introduce yourself. It fundamentally shifts you from that reactive hope strategy.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, fingers crossed. To a proactive, disciplined approach.
I can really see how that consistent, reliable presence builds trust over time. It makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
And building on that idea of a clear process, Neil introduces another really crucial concept, the slam dunk opportunity.
Ah, yes, the slam dunk.
What exactly defines a slam dunk in Neil's eyes, and why is it so vital?
Okay, so a slam dunk opportunity, he defines it as one that looks like it was written for you and for your company. It's that perfect, almost undeniable alignment where your core competency, your unique strength, perfectly matches what the government is looking for. It just feels obvious, like an obvious fit.
Requires no mental gymnastics.
Exactly. No mental gymnastics to see your company as the ideal solution.
And he's very clear on the distinction, isn't he?
Yeah.
A slam dunk is not something that requires you to, like, rationalize it or convince your colleagues it's a good fit?
Absolutely not. If you're internally debating, trying to force that alignment, he says explicitly not a slam dunk.
And the importance here feels crystal clear. Neil argues basically that a key answer to how do I win more contracts is simply to have more of those slam dunk opportunities flowing through your sales pipeline.
That's it.
Which implies a really focused approach, right?
Yeah.
Pursuing only the highest probability wins. It's about efficiency, maximizing your return on effort.
Indeed. And the actionable tip he gives is that you define your own slam dunk criteria. You can make the net for your business, as he puts it, as low as it needs to be to consistently score wins. So this means if you're a newer small business, maybe your slam dunk is a smaller, very specific project.
That's okay.
And that's perfectly valid. The impact here is pretty profound. This concept, it isn't about arrogance or being overconfident. It's about disciplined strategic focus.
Right.
It forces you to develop real self-awareness about your company's true strengths and, crucially, helps you prioritize your limited time and resources for maximum impact.
Like a sharpshooter.
Exactly. Like a sharpshooter aiming for the bullseye every time, instead of just scattering shots and hoping one hits. It implicitly advises against chasing every single opportunity that lands on your desk.
Which is so tempting.
Oh, absolutely. A common and costly pitfall for so many businesses.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
So, okay, once you have that foundational mindset, you understand it's a process. You're focused on slam dunks.
Mm-hmm.
Neil then outlines three strategic pillars for generating revenue. This gives a really holistic view beyond just chasing prime contracts.
Yes, and these three revenue streams, when you look at them together, they offer a powerful diversification strategy. The first one is subcontracting under other small businesses.
Okay.
This leverages the roughly $170 billion awarded annually to small businesses as prime contractors. So, for example, say a woman-owned small business wins a big prime contract for a broad scope of work.
Mm-hmm.
You can come in and support a very specific task area. Maybe it's LinkedIn outreach and social selling for their capture efforts, or a highly specialized technical service like a unique software integration.
So you find your niche within their win.
Exactly. These opportunities are abundant, and they're often less intimidating for newer players because you're leveraging someone else's existing prime relationship and their expertise.
That's smart. Okay, so the second stream is the most traditional one, prime contracting directly with federal agencies.
Right, this is the big one. It represents an enormous $750 billion in small business eligible dollars annually. This is where your company directly bids on and wins contracts as the primary contractor. You take full responsibility for the project. It's the direct path, often with the biggest potential rewards.
Makes sense. And the third?
And the third, which is often overlooked, is subcontracting under large businesses, the large primes.
Okay.
They're typically required to push at least 30% of their contract value to small businesses as part of their subcontracting plans. This represents a staggering $570 billion in general large business spending.
Huge numbers.
Huge. Now, Neil does note that large businesses can be more risk averse. He says they've been burned so many times by smalls.
Understandable.
Yeah, and they tend to want to keep all the money for themselves, but they also offer access to significantly larger contracts than most small businesses could ever pursue on their own. You know, you could be part of a team pursuing a $220 million opportunity, contributing your specific piece to a much grander scale.
Okay, so the theoretical impact of chasing all three is in potentially tripling your revenue by expanding your market. But it's not just about the money, is it? It's also about building that invaluable experience and credibility.
Absolutely. Past performance.
Exactly. So for a small business just starting out, or one looking to grow, how does Neil advise prioritizing these? Is it really realistic to tackle all three from day one? Or are there, you know, common pitfalls people fall into when they try to spread themselves too thin?
That's a fantastic question. And it's where Neil's actionable advice really shines. While that idea of tripling revenue is super appealing, the reality for most small businesses, especially the new ones, is that resources are finite.
Always.
Always. The pitfall is paralysis by analysis, or even worse, trying to do all three and doing none of them well. Neil strongly advocates starting with subcontracting under small businesses.
Okay, why that one first?
Because it's often a lower barrier to entry. You're leveraging another small business's prime win. That means they've already navigated the initial complexities, the full contractual burdens, the initial agency relationship.
You get to learn.
You get to learn, and you get to gain crucial past performance. That track record the government always looks for without taking on the full risk of being a prime right away.
That makes sense.
It lets you build your reputation and experience in manageable steps. Then, once you have a few solid subcontracting successes under your belt, Then you can strategically layer in prime contracting or maybe pursue large business subcontracting where you support a much bigger deal. It's like a stair-step approach to growth.
Building confidence along the way.
Exactly. Building confidence and capability.
That graduated approach makes so much sense for managing risk and resources. And speaking of building foundations, as you diversify, Neil brings us back to another core truth. Riches are in the niches.
Yes. The concept here is just the vital importance of having a very clear, focused offer, a niche-down core competency. Neil gives fantastic, practical examples. Instead of just saying IT services...
Too broad.
Way too broad. Think about something incredibly specific like SharePoint support instead of cybersecurity, maybe red team cybersecurity. Or think about really specific construction areas like just floors or walls.
Wow, that's specific.
That's specific. Or specialized services like ASL services for government agencies, specific types of training, even highly specific products like fasteners or water management radar technology.
Okay. The benefits of this extreme focus seem compelling. It makes your messaging simpler, easier for buyers to remember you.
Instantly memorable. When they need SharePoint support, your company immediately comes to mind because you've positioned yourself as the expert.
Right.
It also lets you build stronger, more relevant past performance in those specific areas, making your expertise undeniable. Neil uses his own last company as an example. They niche down four levels deep.
Four levels.
Yeah. From general IT to software development, then specifically to Microsoft technologies, and finally, laser focused on Microsoft SharePoint. It's about being this specific thing for everyone in your chosen niche.
Instead of
trying to be everything to no one, which usually just leads to being invisible to everyone.
You're absolutely right. It feels counterintuitive for business owners, doesn't it? They want to cast a wide net, thinking more breadth equals more opportunity. They fear missing out.
Totally. But in the federal market, deep expertise in a narrow area is far more valuable than broad, shallow knowledge. This deep dive into a niche helps you stand out dramatically from that huge pool of, what, over 350,000 registered small businesses.
But a crowded field.
It really is. You become the go-to expert for a very specific problem, making it easier for agencies to find you, trust you, and ultimately choose you. It's about quality over quantity in your offering, and it pays dividends in visibility and trust.
So, with that foundational mindset solid, it's a process. Focus on slam dunks, niche down, diversify streams. The next logical question is, okay, how do I actually find these opportunities?
Right, the practical part.
Exactly. This is where Neil shifts from philosophy to practicality, showing how to leverage readily available government data. And honestly, the insights he pulls from these tools are, well, invaluable.
They really are a gold mine. First up, he talks about USspending.gov.
Okay.
Neil highlights its function for finding new awards. Now, the reason he emphasizes new awards is crucial. It helps you avoid contracts already in their option years.
Less likely to be recompeted soon.
Exactly. Less likely to be recompeted or open for new bids right away. Instead, you focus on fresh opportunities where agencies are just starting new initiatives. You can filter by fiscal years, keywords like workforce development or cloud migration services, to pinpoint relevant spending.
And he advises focusing on only contracts.
Crucially, yes. Focus on only contracts when looking for direct opportunities, as opposed to grants or other funding types. Keeps your search targeted on procurement.
And he also mentions a free tool on GovCon in a box. Something about NAICS codes.
Yeah, that's right. A free tool that helps identify relevant NAICS codes, those industry classification codes, just from keywords, which is vital for targeted searches within these government databases.
Okay.
The impact here is significant. USspending.gov lets you proactively follow the money. You see exactly where agencies are currently spending on new initiatives. It helps you avoid stagnant contracts and focus your efforts where the active growth is.
Being where the action is now.
Exactly. Aligning your business with real current demand, not just old spending patterns.
Got it. Next tool.
Next, and this is a tool Neil says he loves, is FPDS.gov, the Federal Procurement Data System.
Okay, FPDS.
This is a powerhouse for identifying those slam dunk opportunities. It lets you find out who won what, both large and small primes, and critically, you can often identify the contracting officer, the KO, details there.
That sounds huge. How do you use that strategically?
Well, for strategic pipeline building, you can search for contracts ending in, say, 2025. or even specific months like October, November, December that align perfectly with your core competency.
Looking for recompetes.
Exactly. Prime candidates for recompetes existing contracts nearing their end date, highly likely to be reawarded.
And knowing the contracting officer, that's a game changer for influencing things, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Neil explains you can actually call them politely, of course, to request past performance work statement documents, the PWS, which detail the requirements, or even discuss and potentially influence the NAICS codes for an upcoming bid.
Like pushing for a code with a lower size standard.
Precisely. Gently suggesting an NAICS code with a lower small business threshold to maybe eliminate some larger competitors from the pool. It's also important to remember many of those expensive subscription tools out there, they typically pull their data directly from government databases like fpds.gov, meaning you have direct free access to this competitive intelligence without paying a premium.
Wow. So the implications of mastering FPDS are pretty profound then.
Totally. It empowers you to basically act as your own market research firm, direct access to competitive intelligence, and crucially, direct contacts within agencies. This lets you shift left in the sales cycle.
Get involved earlier.
Much earlier. Before the official request for proposal, the RFP even drops. It's all about proactive engagement, influencing requirements, building relationships before the formal solicitation hits. That gives you a distinct competitive advantage. It's a real strategic asset.
Okay. And the third tool in this government data arsenal.
That would be the GSA eLibrary. This one's excellent for competitive
I guess
analysis.
so.
You can use it to research your competitors who are on GSA multiple award schedules, MAS. Those are the pre-negotiated contracts agencies use a lot for common goods and services.
Right.
The strategic tip here is to look for specific SIN special item numbers, those specific service categories within the MAS where there are only a few contractors listed.
Finding the less crowded spots.
Exactly. If your services or products fit those less crowded SINs, it represents a significantly less competitive playground for you to operate in, dramatically increases your win probability.
And this highlights, again, that transparency in the federal market.
It really does. It's a unique advantage. Unlike the private sector, so much of this competitive intelligence is public. You can directly see where competitors are positioned and strategically place your company in those less saturated niches within these big contract
It's
vehicles.
about being smart, finding the path of least resistance.
Precisely. Finding that path to your ideal customer, allowing you to enter the market with a higher chance of success and build that critical past performance.
Okay, so mastering these tools is essential. But beyond that, Neil stresses boosting your overall federal visibility and reach. He even coined a term for it, the Federal Visibility Score.
Yeah, on GovCon in a box. This score is basically a metric showing how visible your company is to federal buyers when they use their tools, like the Dynamic Small Business Search or DSBS.
And the numbers are pretty stark, right?
They are quite telling. Out of over 350,000 small businesses, only 144 currently have a perfect score. And a critical yet often overlooked issue Neil points out is having a working link to your capability statement in DSBS.
A working link. Seems basic.
You'd think so, but a shocking 51% are either missing it entirely or have poor non-functional links. And Neil notes, buyers often just move on if that link isn't working. Doesn't matter how good your company is.
It's like having a great storefront with no working door.
Exactly like that. And GovCon in a Box offers a free tool to check your score, and it gives clear guidance to help you reach that perfect 100.
So the takeaway is being the best isn't enough. You must be found.
Absolutely. Fixing these seemingly simple visibility issues can actually lead to inbound calls from potential teammates, even contracting officers who are actively searching for capabilities. This builds crucial trust and opens doors before you even make direct contact. It's like a silent marketing engine working for you 24/7.
Powerful. Another visibility booster he talks about, and one that feels increasingly important, is engaging on LinkedIn for social selling.
Yes, LinkedIn. Neil calls it the only professional network for genuinely engaging with federal buyers. Many are mid to senior level folks finding teammates and building trust around the clock, way before a formal sale.
And it's more than just liking posts.
Oh, much more. He encourages thoughtful, relevant comments, not those generic AI-generated things.
We've all seen those.
Right. Actual insights. And reposting content with your own thoughts added to your network. He gave an example. If the Army's PEO, EIS, posts about soldiers using new gear in Kuwait, a thoughtful comment from you shows you're paying attention, you understand their mission, makes you visible to a key audience.
So the impact here is that social selling replaces those traditional cold approaches.
Effectively, yes. It allows buyers to self-educate about your company, see your expertise in action, build trust with you before any formal meetings. This makes those initial interactions far more productive because they already have a positive impression.
It warms up the conversation.
Exactly. Transforms a cold call into a warm conversation.
Okay. And then there's the strategic request for information, RFI response plan. This sounds important.
Hugely important. Neil adamantly states that RFIs are the best way to get in and gain visibility, especially with those increasingly busy federal buyers who might just ignore a cold meeting request.
Why do RFIs work so well?
Because the government puts them out precisely because they want responses. They're actively looking for market research, trying to refine requirements, understand industry capabilities. Responding shows you're prepared, you offer value, you're proactively engaged, you're ready to help solve their problems.
So it's not just a bureaucratic exercise that vanishes into a void.
Definitely not. You need to treat RFI responses like actual proposals. Write for the win, he says. Aim for that same high quality. And ideally, Neil suggests aiming to submit at least one RFI response per week.
One a week. Wow.
Yeah. Consistently focusing on your slam dunk core competency. That consistency keeps you on their radar, demonstrates commitment and capability over time.
And you can actually influence things with an RFI response.
Absolutely. Your response can strategically influence the government's acquisition approach. Maybe you suggest a specific contract vehicle they should use, especially if you happen to hold it and it aligns well.
Smart.
It can also shape the technical scope. For example, maybe you present a compelling argument that convinces them to switch a requirement from needing a gold partner certification to just a silver one, which could broaden the competitive pool to include you.
Interesting. And it helps with teaming, too.
Big time. Responding to an RFI immediately establishes you as a prepared teaming partner. It differentiates you from those who just wait for the final RFP and makes larger firms much more likely to collaborate with you on future bids. They see you're proactive.
And Neil even advises reaching out before submitting the RFI.
Yeah, a pre-submission engagement. Reaching out to the points of contact program office, contracting shop, small business professionals, just to thank them for putting out the RFI before you submit your response.
So it's a polite touch point.
Exactly. A simple, polite act that ensures you're already on their radar when your formal response lands makes it more likely to get noticed and seriously considered.
The impact of this RFI strategy seems profound then. They're not just paperwork.
Not at all. They are powerful strategic sales tools. They let you influence requirements, build relationships with key decision makers, get noticed by the very people you want to work with, gives you a significant competitive edge over those just waiting for RFPs.
Transforms a passive waiting game into an active influencing campaign.
You got it. That's exactly the idea.
All right, let's pivot now to a major force shaping the federal buying landscape for 2025 and beyond. The disruptive impact of DOGE. That's the Department of Government Efficiency.
Right.
This isn't just a buzzword, is it? It's actively reshaping how the government buys, fundamentally changing the contracting environment.
Oh, it's certainly not just a buzzword. Neil observes that DOG is, quote, hammering everybody. It's leading to significant federal employee layoffs, potentially hundreds of thousands across various agencies.
Hundreds of thousands.
Potentially. The critical point here is this pervasive reduction in workforce across the government, while spending often remains the same or even increases in those mission-critical areas. This forces agencies to do significantly more with less, streamlining processes, aggressively scrutinizing spending.
And we're seeing contract cuts, too.
Aggressive contract cuts and renegotiations for both small and large firms. Neil specifically notes, for instance, that the GSA is targeting a staggering $65 billion in large consulting contracts for cuts in 2025.
$65 billion?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This isn't just, you know, trimming the fat. It's a fundamental reevaluation of how work gets done.
And this is driving a mindset shift within the administration.
Yeah.
Merit.
Exactly. A push for merit over traditional set-asides, increasingly emphasizing competing full and open. Neil has observed that agencies like the Department of State, USAE,
Agency for International Development.
Right. And the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, they seem particularly on the chopping block, maybe due to a perceived lack of strong congressional champions for their budgets and missions. In stark contrast, the Department of Defense, DOD, is considered a third rail.
Untouchable.
Largely untouchable. Strong, bipartisan support, critical national security mission, HHS, Health and Human Services, he describes as kind of safe, So some protection, but not total immunity.
So the immediate impact is clear.
Yeah.
Massive rapid change demands extreme adaptability.
Absolutely. You have to embrace that who moved my cheese mentality. Proactively seek where the contracts the cheese are going now. Don't cling to old patterns or just wait for cuts to hit your agency.
Can't be reactive.
Cannot be reactive. It demands a decisive shift away from that hope strategy to a proactive, adaptable stance. Neil's powerful advice is to act like DOGE was your idea.
Okay, what does that mean?
Take personal responsibility for these changes. Actively find ways to control your own path forward instead of just passively accepting cuts or hoping things go back to normal. Take ownership of your destiny in this volatile market.
This leads right into the importance of identifying and aligning to essential services. In this DOGE environment, agencies are rigorously cutting the non-essential. So for our listeners, what falls into non-essential? And how do you make sure you're aligned with mission critical?
Exactly. That essential versus non-essential framework is absolutely key right now. Neil highlights broad cuts in many administrative tasks, lots of public health grants, things like chronic disease prevention, general health education campaigns, global health initiatives, maybe not tied to an immediate crisis.
Things perceived as less urgent.
Perhaps. And various auxiliary services not core to an agency's immediate operational mandates. Success now hinges entirely on aligning what you sell to an agency's truly mission-critical areas.
Okay, give us some examples, like for the Army.
Okay, within the Army, you need to shift focus. Instead of general IT support, think about essential training, leadership development, things that directly impact preparing soldiers to fight. Look at logistics, sustainment, force projection, ensuring the supply chain is efficient, maybe integrating things like digital twins for predictive maintenance, and then core combat capabilities and modernization, literally fighting tomorrow's wars.
Yeah.
Anything enhancing immediate operational readiness or future defense posture.
So connecting your service directly to their core undeniable mission.
Hmm.
What about the VA, the Department of Veterans Affairs? That seems clear.
It is much clearer given their direct focus. The VA has very distinct mission areas.
Yep.
VHA, the Health Administration for Direct Healthcare. VBA, the Benefits Administration, handling compensation, pensions, education benefits.
Mm-hmm.
And NCA, the National Cemetery Administration. Your offerings have to align directly to those specific branches and their core functions. And for DHS, Homeland Security, Neil notes a massive increase in areas like Border Patrol budgets. That indicates a clear mission-critical focus for growth, an area where contractors can expect more opportunities.
It's about finding where the agency must spend.
Regardless of broader cuts, yes.
And to DOGE-proof your business, Neil recommends more than just identifying essential services, right?
Yes, a multi-pronged approach. First, research the agency's mission and priorities deeply. Dive into their strategic plans, annual reports. Second, map your services directly to these critical functions. Explicitly show how you deliver essential services supporting their core objectives.
Make the connection obvious.
Obvious. Third, use mission-critical language in all your reports and communications with the agency. Neil says DOGE is building AI tools to analyze this stuff.
Seriously?
Yeah, so it's like SEO optimization for your contracting efforts.
Yeah.
Make sure your value prop resonates with their priority keywords.
Wow. Okay, and the last piece.
Finally, he suggests this really insightful internal DOGEzir role play. Designate someone on your team whose job is to basically come at your contract with the mindset of, say, Elon Musk or a DOGE agent, actively trying to find areas to cut, optimize, eliminate.
Forces you to defend and adapt.
Exactly. It makes your offerings inherently more resilient and efficient. The impact here isn't just survival, it's strategic growth, becoming indispensable. By deeply understanding agency priorities and speaking their essential language, you position your company as indispensable. Future-proof.
Moving from nice to have to must have.
That's the goal.
Okay, beyond DOGE, there are crucial contract vehicle and compliance imperatives. GSA MAS contract vehicles are a prime example. Why are these so vital now?
Increasingly vital because GSA is actively pushing agencies to use MAS schedules. They're becoming a primary procurement vehicle because they offer simplicity, flexibility, security for the government.
And for contractors.
For contractors, being on GSA MAS means you're already vetted. Agencies can buy from you faster. A key action is working with your contracting officer, your CO, to add relevant special item numbers, SINs, those service categories, to your schedule.
Using eLibrary again.
Yeah. Strategically use GSA eLibrary to research competitors' SINs, identify those areas with fewer contractors. If your services fit those less crowded SINs, it's a less competitive niche, potentially higher demand.
This again reinforces that transparency point. Being on the right GSA MAS with well-chosen SINs makes it easier to be found and used. Streamlines things for everyone.
Definitely. And then there's CMMC, Cybersecurity Maturity Model Certification.
Yes, CMMC. Can't avoid this one.
Cannot avoid it. It's no longer optional for DoD contractors. It's mandatory. CMMC ensures proper cybersecurity controls for the Defense Industrial Base, the DIB, that whole network of companies supplying the DoD.
And it's a shift from self-attestation.
Big shift. To a trust but verify approach, meaning independent third-party assessments. There are different levels. Level one requires 17 specific controls, foundational things like access control, regular security awareness training for employees, auditing system activities, consistent configuration management.
Basic digital hygiene, really.
In a way, yes, but documented and verifiable. Level two is far more intense, and that's where most companies working with controlled unclassified information, CUI, will likely fall.
So it's not just a checklist, it needs a formal assessment.
Exactly. Requires a certified third-party assessment organization, a C3PAO, to conduct the assessment and issue your company's certification. And the urgency here cannot be overstated. CMMC is here. It's progressed a lot. Compliance dates are coming fast for various contracts.
Neil's pretty blunt about this, isn't he?
Very blunt. He stresses, without CMMC certification, you are not going to get contracts from DoD or from prime contractors working with DoD. It's not a future worry. It's a present gatekeeper for a massive chunk of the federal market.
That's a huge implication. For listeners feeling overwhelmed, what's Neil's advice for just getting started with CMMC?
His actionable advice is straightforward. Download the CMMC 2.0 accreditation guide immediately. Create a realistic project plan and just get started. Even if it's only 15 minutes to an hour a day,
break it down.
Break it down into manageable tasks. For level one, maybe start by documenting your access control policies. Who has access to what? How is it controlled? Implement multi-factor authentication everywhere possible. Ensure all employees do annual security awareness training. These are foundational steps.
Where most small businesses need to begin.
Exactly. The impact is stark. CMMC isn't just technical. It's a critical business imperative. Neil compares its lead time to capture. Delaying means lost opportunities, potentially being locked out of crucial DoD work. You must proactively address it to stay competitive.
Okay, transitioning from tools and compliance, let's dig into the art of engagement and building relationships. Starting with maybe the biggest hurdle, getting that crucial first meeting with federal buyers. So many small businesses struggle here.
It's a huge challenge. The reality is federal employees are overwhelmingly busy. Neil estimates 2,500% busier due to reduced workforce, same or higher spending demands. Less time than ever.
So how do you break through?
Well, to disrupt their typical expectation of, you know, an hour-long pitch, Neil advises asking for a brief 5 to 10 minute meeting.
Just 5 or 10 minutes.
Yeah. It respects their time, makes it an easy yes, and significantly increases your chances of getting in the door. It's a bit of a psychological hack. A short meeting feels less like a big commitment, more like a quick chat.
And we already talked about RFI your way in.
Another powerful tactic here. Responding to RFIs gets you on their plate, demonstrates value when they're too busy for a cold meeting. And if one door seems closed, Neil says, try related doors. Don't fixate on just one person, like a specific John or Jane. Target the office or business unit as a whole. Like PEO Digital in the Navy has hundreds of people. Seek to connect with a person in that office, not necessarily the person you first aimed for. Get an entry point. Start building connections. It's about persistence, adaptability.
Makes sense. And credibility is key, too.
Paramount. And often overlooked. Neil is explicit. A generic Gmail account is an automatic credibility hit. And not in a good way.
Looks unprofessional.
Exactly. Sends the wrong signal. Makes you look less established. Invest in a professional domain for your email and website. He notes it can cost as little as $12 a year, but the positive impact on first impressions is disproportionately huge.
So these tactical approaches, they acknowledge the buyer's reality.
They do. They help you stand out by showing respect for their time and projecting immediate professionalism. These small details make you a far more attractive prospect for that initial connection.
Okay, so once you've got that first meeting, the real work begins. nurturing strategic relationships. Neil has that core principle. People don't care what you know until they know that you care.
This is so fundamental for long-term success. Demonstrating genuine care means proactive steps, researching the agency or company thoroughly, anticipating their needs or assets they might value, and, perhaps most powerfully, making introductions that benefit them.
Like connecting them to someone useful.
Exactly. Neil gives that example. Connecting someone to the head of Air Force Contracting, he calls that the ultimate give. Meetings must be win-win. Both sides invest time, both gain something tangible. Your purpose statement for a meeting, Neil advises, should clearly define what's in it for them.
Not about your pitch, but their needs.
Precisely. How will the federal buyer benefit from this time? What problem can you help solve? What insight can you provide? It shifts the focus entirely.
This distinction is so important. Separating superficial connections from truly valuable ones. Neil differentiates between network relationships and strategic relationships.
He does. Network relationships are, you know, people you meet at events, online maybe, good to know. But strategic relationships are characterized by a mutual commitment to success. And ideally, recurring meetings.
Recurring.
Yeah. Like with a teaming partner, maybe every 2 weeks, 15 minutes, focus call on a mutual pipeline. With a federal buyer, maybe every 30 days, brief check-in, understand their evolving challenges.
And the benefits of these strategic relationships.
Immense. They help you spot opportunities much earlier, secure crucial introductions, and vitally learn about customer challenges and pain points directly from the source. This deep understanding is the heart of effective capture management.
It's letting you tailor solutions before the RFP drops.
Exactly. And to uncover these needs deeply, Neil advocates using spin selling, that questioning technique. Situational, problem, implication, need, payoff questions.
Okay, tell us more about spin.
It's a methodology to move beyond surface level issues, to really grasp the broader impact of a problem. Neil uses that great example of an elevator maintenance issue in a VA hospital.
Right, it's not just a broken elevator.
Not at all. The implication is it affects the entire hospital staff transporting patients, equipment, supplies. Most critically, it directly impacts the veterans, causing delays, frustration. So by asking questions that clarify the situation, identify the problem, explore the implications across the organization.
You get the full picture.
You get the full picture. And finally, you lead to discussing solutions that create a clear need payoff for the client. This approach helps you understand their needs far better than your competitors.
The impact here is huge then. Building genuine strategic relationships isn't just a soft skill.
Not at all. It's a hard, undeniable competitive advantage. It elevates you from just being a vendor to becoming a trusted advisor. That leads to early insights, opportunities your competitors won't even see.
You become part of their inner circle.
Helping them define the problem, and by extension, shaping the solution that perfectly fits what you do. It's proactive, high-value engagement.
Okay, let's shift gears now to maybe the most transformative force for 2025 and beyond. Artificial intelligence. AI. Neil is unequivocal. AI is the now, not the future.
Absolutely. Federal agencies are actively exploring how AI fits into their program offices. They recognize it's not some future concept anymore. It's a present reality, fundamentally transforming operations.
And Neil has a framework for understanding AI's impact.
Yeah, a very practical framework that helps clarify how AI can be leveraged. Accelerators, enablers, and transformers.
Okay, break those down. Accelerators.
Accelerators are AI tools that automate tasks you already do well, just faster and maybe at higher quality. Think using ChatGPT to quickly draft proposals, write marketing copy, summarize dense research. Makes you more efficient.
Got it. Enablers.
Enablers are AI tools that let you go beyond your current skill set, adding new capabilities. An example might be building a custom GPT to act as a specialized knowledge base, adding a new analytical skill to a knowledge worker in an agency. Augmenting human capabilities.
Okay. And transformers.
Transformers are the highest level. This is where AI creates entirely new AI-native business processes, going so far beyond basic business process automation that it fundamentally reshapes how work gets done, maybe creates entirely new services, reimagining workflows with AI at the core.
This is where it gets really interesting, especially for our listeners. Neil points out this massive opportunity for knowledge workers. Basically, anyone working at a computer.
Huge opportunity. He says a staggering 90% of them don't even know how to use these tools effectively yet. That creates a huge competitive advantage for those who do.
So the implication is clear. AI isn't just for tech companies.
Not at all. It's a fundamental shift for all government contractors, regardless of your core competency. It challenges you, the listener, to think, how can AI make me a better version of myself? How can my company become AI-enabled? It's about personal and organizational agility.
And to really illustrate the practical, real-world applications, Neil draws insights from that AWS Reinforce 2025 keynote.
Yeah, featuring Amy Herzog and George Gyros. They emphasize a core principle, security by design, meaning AWS integrates security into every team from the ground up, emphasizing secure by design, pervasive encryption.
Identity and access management is key there.
Foundational, IAM. Ensuring we know who you are and therefore we know what you can access. New tools like internal access findings use automated reasoning to show exactly who has access to critical resources like S3 buckets or EC2 instances. Granular visibility, critical for government.
And for threat detection, they're using honeypots.
High interaction honeypots called madpots. Tens of thousands globally actively attracting bad actors, gathering real-time threat intel. Blackfoot is their data plane, custom packet processing to stop malicious activity.
And AI plays a role in detection.
Big time. GuardDuty Extended Threat Detection uses AML to correlate signals across AWS services. It automatically detects complex attack sequences like credential compromise, then data exfiltration flags it as one critical finding. Security Hub gives that summary dashboard of threats, exposures, letting you drill down. It's a robust, proactive defense ecosystem.
And the discussion on generative AI and security sounds really relevant for GovCons.
Absolutely. Comcast shared a remarkable stat. 20% of their threat model and pen testing findings now come from developers building AI solutions.
Wow.
Yeah. So they're creating an AI workbench, maturing their AI software development lifecycle to manage these new risks. Internally, AWS teams use large language models, LLMs, from Bedrock, their foundational AI service, to analyze text, correlate unstructured info, build efficiency tools.
Like security chatbots.
Exactly. Security-focused chatbots give developers instant guidance, answer security questions, reducing issues before formal reviews, speeding things up. AI also helps cloud response teams search past cases, analyze patterns, identify high ROI areas for incident response. They even have drift detection systems to flag potential over-reliance on AI.
And it's not just security. BMW built an AI assistant for cloud optimization.
Yeah, the in-console cloud assistant, ICCA, on Bedrock. It continuously optimizes their huge cloud infrastructure over 1,300 accounts, gives real-time recommendations, even one-click fixes for spending and performance. These are tangible, high-impact applications.
So the big strategic takeaway for our listeners.
Security, when done right, especially with AI, is an enabler for innovation, not a barrier. A secure foundation removes friction, gives teams confidence to experiment faster because guardrails are in place. The examples from AWS, Comcast, BMW show AI isn't just for tech firms. It's hidden core functions like security infrastructure operations.
Huge opportunity then.
Massive opportunity. Either specialize in AI integration for your clients, helping them adopt and secure it, or strategically use AI internally in your own company to offer more competitive, efficient services, whatever your niche. The question isn't if AI impacts you, but how you leverage it.
Remember, in the dynamic world of GovCon 2025, Neil McDonald's message holds true. It's not a secret, it's a process.
As federal agencies rapidly adopt AI for everything from cybersecurity to infrastructure management, how will you leverage AI not just to survive, but to truly innovate and gain a competitive edge in your specific niche? Will you be among the 10% of knowledge workers who embrace these tools, or will you wait for others to lead? What's your AI-enabled strategy for 2025?
To learn more about the GovCon Chamber of Commerce, GovCon in a Box, and specialized services designed to help you win more federal business, email Neil McDonnell at neilmcdonnell@govconchamber.com or call him at 703-622-75360.